Good evening, Rabosa. Good evening, men and ladies. I'd like to, first of all, thank the YU Torah team for arranging this incredible series every single night of the week. There are two shiurim, l'chavid, to prepare ourselves for Tisha B'Av Haba Aleinu L'Tova. It should be a Tisha B'Av of simcha, of rejoicing, of celebration, be'ezus Hashem, and in the zechus of all the Talmud Torah derabim. I would like to share with you this evening a sugya that relates to another aspect of contemporary applications of the halachas of the Beis HaMikdash. Well, last week we talked about walking up onto Har HaBayis. That was a little bit more controversial. Tonight's topic is going to be less controversial, but at the same time, relatively troubling. And that is, I'd like to speak tonight about the halachas of the Zecher LeMikdash halachas that were established after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, such that we should be able to remember the Beis HaMikdash even in its destruction. And troubling, and for whatever reason it is so, a number of those halachas are not practiced bizman hazeh, and I'd like to analyze a number of them, both in terms of what the halachas are, and perhaps to offer some limud zechus, why it might be that some of these practices are not practiced regularly. So first of all, let's give some background that I'm just going to share you on my screen, if I could have that authority from the hosts to share my screen. There we go. Ah, Baruch Hashem, it worked. Terrific. Thank you for the coordinators for making that so easy. Okay, so Zecher LeMikdash, during construction, in dress, and at weddings, we will see numerous different applications of this mitzvah derabanan of Zecher LeMikdash. One second, just to get adjusting my screens. Great. Okay, so the Gemara of Basa Daf Samach tells us a fabulous story. You might have heard this story, in which case it's worthwhile to hear it again. It tells us a story that after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, the Jewish people, as you could not even begin to imagine, were utterly, utterly distraught. They were besides themselves. They were, you know, there was almost like no point to live. And there were those righteous Jews who decided that how much longer could we live like this, and how possibly could it be appropriate that we should eat meat? And they stopped eating meat. How could we drink wine? And they stopped drinking wine. And Rabbi Yeshua bumped into them. You're welcome to look on the screen if you want to see it inside. Rabbi Yeshua bumped into them and says, "Gentlemen, how come I understand you're not drinking wine or eating meat?" And they said, so they responded, "How could it possibly be the meat that was sacrificed on the Mizbeach? And now there's no longer a Beis HaMikdash. The wine that was poured as a libation, as a nesach, a nisach on the Mizbeach. And now we don't have that either. How can we drink it?" So Rabbi Yeshua, you know, played their game and said, "I hear. So if that's the case, you should probably not eat bread either, because among the korbanos that were accompanied, many of the meat korbanos, was breads." And they said, "Taka, you're making a good point. We should stop eating bread. But that's okay, because we still have other things. We can eat fruits, etc." And he said to them, "No, you can't eat fruits either, because fruits are brought to the Beis HaMikdash as bikurim." They said, "Yeah, I hear, that's a good point, but it's okay, we could still eat other fruits that are not the Shivas Haminim." He says, "But wait, you shouldn't drink water either, because water is also poured on the Mizbeach on Sukkos." And at that point, they realized that it was an argument ad absurdium, and they realized they were caught, and that wasn't the right way to do it. Now, before we go to the continuation of the Gemara, I want to just share with you something that is interesting to me, and that is that there's a minhag that the Beis Yosef quotes here, quotes from the Kolbo, a minhag that some people have during the 3 weeks, for all 3 weeks, ladies and gentlemen, not to drink wine or to eat meat. And we might have thought that that's, it's hard enough for us that we could go a week. You know, Sfaradim just have to go a week. We have to go nine, Ashkenazim have to go 9 days without eating meat. We think that's hard enough. And we figure out all kinds of ways to get around it. I remember when I was in Eretz Yisrael, I learned by a great tzaddik, a Talmud Chacham, by the name of Rav Asher Arieli. And Rav Asher Arieli was known for his incredible pashtus, his simplicity, his humility, living a life without luxury and not wanting luxury. And somebody told him that he found that they heard that there's this restaurant in Yerushalayim that has on schedule a siyum every 30 minutes. You come to this meat restaurant in Yerushalayim, and every 30 minutes, you get yourself a siyum. And what a terrible thing. What does Rav Asher think? What does the Rebbe think about this terrible thing in this restaurant? He said, wow, isn't it beautiful that they're making so many siyumim? It all depends on your perspective. Instead of focusing on the negativity of people are trying to figure out ways to eat meat, you know, how beautiful it is that there's so many siyumim taking place. Okay, but that's not what we came to speak about. So if we can't go a whole week without eating our meat, you know, and here there's a minhag for 3 weeks. So I think the idea behind this minhag for 3 weeks, the Chasam Sofer writes that it's not that they took the avelus of the 9 days and expanded the avelus for the 3 weeks. It's based on the Gemara that we just said. The Gemara that we just said was that there were people who didn't want to eat meat at all, who didn't want to drink wine at all. And Rabbi Yeshua challenged them and said, that can't be. Let's look at the end of the story of Rabbi Yeshua, and we'll come to understand where this minhag of the prushim of some people not to eat meat and wine for 3 weeks, during the entire 3 weeks. So the story continues, and then we'll come back to the minhag in a moment. Amar Lahem, Rabbi Yeshua said to that gentleman, my dear friends, I understand your pain, I understand your tsar, I understand where you're coming from. Shelo lihis abel kolikar, to just ignore the fact that we lost our Beis HaMikdash, that's of course not an option. Yefshar. On the other hand, and this is an important psychological insight, ulhisabel yoser midai, but to mourn excessively or too excessively, that's also not possibly. Why? That's not possible. Not because it's not warranted. It's definitely, yes, warranted, but nevertheless, that's just not how halacha is built. Because she'en goes in gzeira al hatzibur, we know that chachamim do not enact any takanos, unless it's something that is feasible for people to keep and maintain. Ella, rather, Rabbi Yeshua said, the way to mourn for the Beis HaMikdash is with the following list of 4 items. Kach amru chachamim. Number one, a person, well, let's pause for a minute, right here. What was Rabbi Yeshua, before we get into the takanos, which we'll talk about for the duration of this year, what was the reason why we can't go overboard and stop eating meat forever and stop drinking wine forever? Well, Rabbi Yeshua said that's not an option because ein gozrim gzeira al hatzibur, it's unreasonable, it's untenable, it's too much. Well, if that's the case, perhaps this minhag, says the Chasam Sofer, developed because even though for a whole year it's untenable and it's unreasonable to not eat meat and drink wine, but for the 3 weeks that are indeed to commemorate the Churban Beis HaMikdash, that is reasonable. And therefore, that is something that people can handle, and therefore, perhaps, this minhag of the 3 weeks is an extension of those prushim who wanted to stop eating wine entirely, and eating meat and drinking wine entirely forever. At least their minhag, or their suggestion, was left bezer anpin, in a little bit, as far as just these 3 weeks. That's the Chasam Sofer's perspective on that minhag, that some people might have, not to eat meat for 3 weeks. Okay, but let's now get to the point, which is where we'd like to speak about tonight, and this, the following 4 points are going to be the topic of tonight's shiur. Number one, how is it that we are supposed to commemorate the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, says the Gemara in Bava Basra, says Rabbi Yehoshua, to these prushim to try to direct them in an appropriate, in an emotionally and psychologically healthy way to commemorate the Churban, the following. Sach sad adam es beisa besid. If you have a house that you plaster, right, you plaster, you whitewash the walls, mishaya bo davar muad, you should leave over part of the walls that are not plastered, that are not whitewashed, perhaps not painted if you're painting your walls. How much do you have to leave over? Kama amar of Yosef, ama al ama. 1 square ama of area of space on the wall that you do not plaster, you do not whitewash, you do not paint, that's what's appropriate to commemorate the Beis HaMikdash. Where do you do it? Concludes the Gemara, Amar Rav Chista, Keneged HaPesach, opposite the doorway. Okay, that's the first thing a person is supposed to do, which we'll talk about in just a moment. But let's see the other few. The next point he says is that, Osa Adam Kol Tzorchei Tzuda. When you have a meal, you should set up for the meal, but Umeshayer Badavar Muad, you should leave over 1 thing that is empty, that is missing from the meal. Mahi Amar Papa Ksada Harsana. A little fish dish. They had these little fried fish, and it was a very small dish, and you should leave out one small dish from your meals, and that's how you should commemorate the Beis HaMikdash. Thirdly, Osa Isha est kol tachshitaha. A woman should dress herself, should adorn herself with all of her jewelry, but umeshayeres davar muat. A woman should make sure to leave out one piece of her jewelry in commemoration of the Churban HaBayis. And then finally, what we're familiar with from weddings, Efer Makleb Rosh Chasanim, a little bit of ashes on the head, b'makom tefillin, as the Gemara says, Hechi Manachla, where do you place those ashes, b'makom tefillin? And often, when I'm a Sadek Kedushin, I tell the Chasan, usually it's right before they walk down, I tell the Chasan, who's usually standing with his parents in a room, they usually give their child a bracha, right before they're about to walk down, I approach the Chasan and I take some ashes that I have prepared in a little Ziploc baggie in my pocket of the inside of my jacket. I take it out and I look to his parents and I say, dear mother and dear father of the Chasan, right now you have to see your son go down to the chuppah with Efer Makle, with ashes on his forehead, b'makom tefillin, to remind us of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. It is my hope and my prayer, I tell them, that Be'ez Hashem, when he marches his children down, there will not be any need to have that. So that's always a poignant moment. So these are the ways that we're supposed to commemorate the Beis HaMikdash. This is what Chazal deem as emotionally and psychologically healthy. And if you notice, one thing is very interesting. There's a theme here. It's not a theme, it's the absence of a theme. These are things that happen once in a while that you don't sort of do all the time or don't affect your daily living. Yeah, you have a piece of something on the wall. It's always there, but you're not changing your lifestyle. You have a big suda, you're going to leave something out. You're not changing your lifestyle drastically. And that's an important lesson. Whenever we try to make change in our lives or remember things in our lives, you can't alter your lifestyle too hard, too fast, too quickly, too much. Little bits, little things help us remember what we need to be mindful of. Okay. Now, before we get into the details of those halachos that is the goal of this evening, I want to share with you a beautiful thought from a sefer called the Toras Chaim. Toras Chaim of Bava Basra says the following. Why is it that we have these three primary, it's actually four, three primary commemorations? Number one, of the leaving aside the plaster or the painting on part of our homes, and jewelry, and the changing, the leaving out something in the meal. So he says something beautiful. He says that since we lost our Beis HaMikdash, our home, we should leave something lacking in our home. Since we lost the Karbanos, which is called the Lechem, Lechem Yishel Hashem, so we should leave something out from our meals. And since we lost the Big Day Kahuna, so the women should also leave out a little bit of their adornment, of their jewelry. These are all to commemorate different aspects of our loss. We should commemorate all those different aspects. Okay, that was all an introduction. I finished half my time just to introduce the topic. Let's talk a little bit about the Amah in construction. So you're building a house. You have to leave part of your house unplastered, an Amah square unplastered. Let's see how the Shulchan Aruch records this halacha, because one or two points emanate from the lashon of the Shulchan Aruch. First of all, as we'll see soon, says when you shouldn't build a palace like the kings do to commemorate the Beis HaMikdash, Ella rather tach beita beiso betit. You should plaster your house with plaster, v'sad besid, and you coat it with whitewash. And you should leave an aman, keneged ha-pesach. We'll define that word, keneged ha-pesach, opposite the doorway, without plaster. Okay, great. But I didn't build my own house. I didn't build my own house and call in a contractor to paint wash or plaster the walls. I bought a house. I bought a house already from somebody else who lived there before, who bought it from someone else who lived there before. Do I have to do that? Well, says the Shulchan Aruch, if you purchase a house that's already plastered, that's already fully painted, you are not required to peel off the paint from the walls or the plaster from the walls. So anybody who bought a house from somebody else and it was, I guess, properly painted and plastered, there's no halacha to go ahead and start chiseling away at what is already there. We're only talking about somebody who goes ahead and builds themselves a house, or somebody goes ahead and paints their wall, such a person is indeed required to leave this section opposite the doorway empty of the plaster or empty of the paint. Now, you're probably looking at your family members, whoever you're listening to this shir, and saying, yeah, I don't know so many people who do that. How come we, you know, you're looking up at your doorway and saying, hey, how come we don't have that? Well, you're not the only ones to wonder this. The Kitzur Shulchan Aruch already 200 years ago asked this question. He said, Masha lo nagu kenata, I don't really have a good answer. I don't really understand why people are not careful about this halacha. So he's not saying that you shouldn't be careful. He's not saying you don't need to follow it. He's just pointing out that it's curious that this is one minhag that for whatever reason, let me rephrase that. It's not a minhag. This is a takana d'rabbanan that for some reason people are not careful about. So let's focus on the location. The lashon of the Shulchan Aruch was it's opposite the doorway, keneged ha-pesach. So what's the idea of opposite the doorway? The idea is you walk into your door and it smacks you in the face. You look inside, you walk inside, and right in front of you, you're reminded of the Churban HaBayis. However, the Mishnah Berurah quotes the Prima Gadim, who has a different definition of the word keneged ha-pesach. The word keneged ha-pesach usually means opposite the doorway. The Prima Gadim suggests that the word keneged could also mean adjacent to the doorway. That means next to the doorway, such that when you're walking out of the house, when you walk out of the house, or let me rephrase that, when you're sitting in your house and looking, facing towards your doorway, most people, if they have a dining room table, usually the head of the household usually sits facing the entrance to the dining room. That's just, I don't know, that's how it is in my house and a lot of houses. The head of the house faces the entrance to the dining room. That faces the door in a sense. So when you're sitting at your dining room table, you're sitting in your, wherever you're sitting, it should be opposite you, which is on top of the doorway if you're going to be facing the doorway. Interesting to note, I saw in a sefer that Rabbi Yashiv did not have his ama al ama that was of peeled plaster opposite the as he walked into the door as a simple reader of the Shulchan Aruch reads, but rather like this other suggestion that it was he had it. I was zocha. I don't remember seeing this, but I was zocha to be in Rabbi Yashiv's home about 20 years ago, and apparently he's quoted in the sefer that he positioned this ama al ama opposite not his home, the entrance to his home, but opposite the entrance to his living room where he sat and learned, so that when he sat and learned, it would be opposite where he was, so he could focus on this ama al ama, whatever he would, where he was situated and sitting. As we all know, he was sitting there for many hours a day. Now, you might have seen some people who want to take this minhag and make it into a beautiful decoration. They'll paint a black box. Says the Shulchan Aruch, Udaloka osan ha-osan ama shachar. No, if you make a black box, that's also called painting. That's also called decorating. We're not supposed to make a black box. You're supposed to have unpainted box or a peeled plastered box or an unplastered box of ama al-ama. Okay, just a side point. It happens to be that when we talk about different shiurim, like an ama, for example, we always have a dispute. You know, there's the Chazanish who holds things are, you know, every measurement is very large. There's Reb Chaim Noe who holds that the measurements are a little smaller. We happen to have two opinions what an ama is. Is it 24 inches, which is 2 feet, or is it just more than a foot and a half, right? A foot and a half is 18 inches. So there's a machlokas with an ama is about 1.5, 1.6 feet, or is it 2 feet? So which one should we do? Which one should we do? So the Mishnah Berurah, in a totally different context, is talking about on Pesach, you have matzah on Pesach, you have maror, you have dalet kosos. So everybody likes making jokes about how big the shiurim from matzah, you know, how big the kezayis has grown in modern times when you look at the measurements that the svarim suggest to have for matzah. And everyone likes to make jokes. Everyone likes to make jokes about how big the cups of wine are. Okay, but all those jokes aside, let's just think about the possibility that there are different opinions of what is a kezayis, what is a kibetza, what is a revius. And there are different opinions without getting into why there are very various and varied opinions, without getting into the details why they are. But the Mishnah Berurah sets down a yesod. The Mishnah Berurah says that, how do you know which opinion to follow, which measurement to follow? Says the Mishnah Berurah that when it comes to shiurin, when there's something that's a d'oraisa, of course, you should go to the measurement that would be more machmir, the larger measurement. And when you're dealing with a mitzvah or an iser or whatever the din d'rabbanan is, so for example, matzah at the Seder night is a d'oraisa. So we should be stringent as far as using the larger shear of matzah. Maror, on the other hand, on Seder night, maror bizman hazeh is only drabanan. So when it comes to maror, we could use the smaller shear of the smaller accepted shear of what is the shear that we have to consume of maror. So putting that aside, coming back home to our discussion, how big should my box be? Well, we're talking about a takana drabanan, zecher lemikdash that was instituted after the destruction of the Beis Hamikdash. Clearly, not a din d'oraisa. And therefore, since it's a derabanan, it would be appropriate to be makel in this in the shear, and be makel, use a smaller shear of 19 inches by 19 inches. That would be sufficient. Now, on one hand, we just mentioned that there's so many people who are not aware of this halacha, or in so many homes that does not have this box of unplastered area. To the opposite extreme, the Shari Tshuva, one of the commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch, says that there is a position that one might suggest that it could be every room needs such a box of unplastered or unpainted area. But we don't pass like that, but it's interesting to know that there is one opinion that does say that every single room, kol cheder v'cheder, does need that. But of course, we don't pass like that. Now, let me ask you a different question. Obviously, it depends on the architecture of your home, but when you have one square amma, you could configure a square amma in numerous ways. It could be an amma width and an amma long, or it could be two ammas wide and a half an amma high, or it could be four ammas wide and a quarter of an amma high. And depending on the configuration of what is exactly behind your door or opposite your doorway, you could have different configurations. And are those okay? Is the point that you have to have a square amma, or is the point that you have to have at least one amma in one dimension and another amma in the perpendicular dimension? So the Prima Gadim says that we don't mean a square amma in area. We mean an amma one way and an amma another way. You can't just use two ammas in one way and half an amma in the other direction to equal one amma squared in area. Rather, we need a full amma in each dimension to have the din. Now, there's an interesting Magen Avram on this Shulchan Aruch. And the Magen Avram says that when you have this amma, he's medayik in the Shulchan Aruch. Let me show you this diuk in the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch wrote, look at what one word could do. Says the Shulchan Aruch, when you build a house, tach beso betit. You should plaster your house with plaster. Notice the word, your house. From that one word, from that extra vav, at the end of that word, your house, beso, comes the Magen Avram and says, mashma, that it's only your house that requires this amma by amma, but not a shul. Beis HaKnesses, shari b'chol inyan, and the minhag indeed is that shuls do not have this halacha of an amma by an amma of unpainted or unplastered area. And the question is why? What's the difference between a shul on one hand and a home on the other hand? I know that the halacha of mezuzah might be a little bit different, but there are reasons. Mezuzah is beisecha, visharecha, as opposed to a shul, which is not yours. But why, when it comes to this takana, why wouldn't the takana's chazal of leaving the plaster or the paint off from a square amma apply equally to a beis knesses? So I found a beautiful sefer that I worked to prepare this shiur called Prinas HaMikdash. A beautiful sefer of recent vintage. My son actually won it because he learned for a bunch of hours over a vacation, so he won it from his yeshiva, the Yeshiva Darchei Torah. And I pilfered it from him. I commandeered it from him for the purpose of this shiur. And this sefer, beautiful sefer, Prinas HaMikdash, quotes a sefer, I'm not familiar, Zecher Zichron Yushalayim, who brings two reasons why you don't have to do this to a base Knesset. So first of all, the more obvious reason is that, you know, the whole point of the minhag to take this takana, to avoid the amma, to leave out an amma, of plaster, is to make our houses a little bit less beautiful, a little bit more destroyed. Well, that's an attitude that you and I might have when we want to, you know, indulge in building ourselves the most beautiful houses that we are able to afford. But when it comes to shuls, then we're not supposed to hold back. We're not supposed to say, oh, let me not go all the way. Let me not luxuriate in the pleasures of a beautiful house. To the contrary, when we build a shul, we want our shul to be as beautiful and as extravagant and as dramatic and in beauty as possible. And that's one possibility. But I actually like the other suggestion that he offers. Va'od, if you look on the bottom of the page of the screen that you see in front of you, based on the bottom of that blue box, the shul is where you're davening all day long to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. You don't need a Zecher L'Churban to remind you of, I hope, you know, let's think about the Beis HaMikdash. Let me not forget the Beis HaMikdash. Let me not ignore the thought about the Beis HaMikdash. What do you mean? You're davening all day, three times a day. Please rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. Rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. Shibaneh Beis HaMikdash Meir V'Yameinu. So there's no need to have a Zecher L'Churban when you are so aware of the Beis HaMikdash. Okay, that was, I have to finish up very shortly, but I do want to talk about another halacha, and that is the very peculiar halacha that we use paskin in the Shulchan Aruch, as you have right here, that when you set your table, you should have a big meal, you should leave something out. I don't really know. I don't really remember going to meals where I'm invited for a guest, and they said, oh, this is your seat, this is the seat for your wife, and this is the seat for nobody's Zechel HaMikdash. I've never seen that, do you? I actually do recall being at a wedding recently when the chassan and kala was the niece and nephew of the caterer. And the caterer at that wedding had chafing dishes at the smorgasbord, and it's at a well-known catering hall. I will not mention its name because I don't want to, you know, anyone to say anything about any specific catering halls, but it's a well-known, well-respected catering hall and a well-known caterer, that every fifth or sixth chafing dish was empty with a log, as though like for a fire, and a little sign that said, of a fire that said, Zechel HaMikdash. Incredibly beautiful. Could you imagine that? Can you imagine making a wedding? Maybe we should be zoch and make weddings and fulfilling the Shulchan Aruch Kipshutu, even though that for some reason people don't really follow this minhag, which we have to figure out why. But they left out, they had chafing dishes that were empty with the sign Zecher HaMikdash. So first of all, it's important to know, as the Taz, who's one of the main primary commentators on the Shulchan Aruch, points out, that this is true even about Seudos Mitzvah, meaning even at a bris, even at a wedding, it is proper to leave out one dish. The question is, what does it mean to leave out one dish? What does that mean? You're leaving out a setting, or you have an extra setting, you leave out a setting, or you're leaving out some food. So Magen Avraham says that you shouldn't put out all the foods that would be appropriate for this meal. As the Gemara said, to leave out that kasad daharsana, that little fish, that little fried battered fish that the Gemara mentioned, to leave out one tiny bit of food. If you look at the Rambam doesn't say to leave out food. The Rambam, when he records this halacha, look how he says it. When you set your table, when you have a big meal with lots of guests, you should leave the table a little bit unset. You should leave a place at your table without a plate from the proper plates that are normally put there. So what we have here is a machlokas, actually. Are you supposed to leave out a food, or are you supposed to leave out a plate from the setting? You know, when you got married, you went to the registry at Bed Bath & Beyond or Macy's, and you looked for settings, and you always wondered, why is it that there is a box that says 40-piece set, and it's only serving for five? And then your wife told you, or your bride told you, or Kala told you, oh, you silly chassan, don't you realize that every setting has eight pieces? You have a big plate, then you have a salad plate, then you have a teacup, then you have a teacup plate, then you have a dessert plate, then you have a bowl, then you have a sauce. So you need all the eight different pieces for each for one setting. So that's what the Rambam says. You have to leave out one of those places. Now, I want to share with you a beautiful explanation. Okay, we'll leave that out for more. I want to understand, why is it that Bizman Hazeh, we don't really see this happening. Again, I told you I saw this once at a wedding, not so long ago, when it happened when the caterer was the uncle of the Chasan Kala. But how come we don't see this nowadays? So the Kaf HaChaim writes a suggestion. He says that in the olden days, there was a very ordered. You know, everyone knew that the meal went as such. Everyone knew that first you started with the entree, then they had the soup, then they had the whatever, then they had the whatever, then they had whatever. There was a very organized order of how people would have their meals. Nowadays, you know, you go to one house, they have fruit cup when you sit down at the table. You go to another person's house, he has a piece of gefilte fish when you sit down at the table. You go to another person's house, they don't have an entree, they don't have a fruit cup, they don't have gefilte fish, they go straight to the soup. What are you thinking when you go to all these people's houses? Do you think the guy who has the gefilte fish, you think he forgot that, he left out the fruit salad? Or if you go to the guy with the fruit salad, you think he left out the gefilte fish, l'chavad churban beis hamikdash? Or the guy that skipped the entree and starts with the soup, you think, oh, he's not serving his entree and his fish because he's doing zeichel mikdash? We don't have our meals like that. We don't have organized, set, precise meals that are all follow a certain pattern. And therefore, it would not be nikar, it would not be recognizable what's happening. And therefore, there's no reason to do this zeichel mikdash, but it wouldn't be recognizable anyway. That's as far as the halachas of not setting a table and not having all the courses for the suda. Let's finish off with one more halacha that the Shulchan Aruch, that was mentioned in the Gemara, that the Shulchan Aruch also paskins, and that's that a woman should not wear her tachshitim, her full set of jewelry. Kishayisha osa tachshite hakesev hazav. When a woman adorns herself with her gold and silver, she should leave out min mitachsh mine hatachshit shenohages bahem. She should leave out one item from her jewelry. First of all, it's important to know that all of these halakhas that we're learning about do not apply in Shabbos. So even if I said that you're supposed to leave out one meal, it doesn't apply in Shabbos. One part of a meal doesn't apply in Shabbos. When we say in this Shulchan Aruch that a woman should leave out one piece of jewelry, also doesn't apply on Shabbos. But again, how come we never hear women saying, oh, I want to wear this earring and this necklace and this bracelet and this ring, but you know what? Zeichel HaMikdash, I'm not going to do that. How come we don't hear our Nashim Tzidkanios mentioning that? So I want to share with you again from this beautiful Sefer, Pnimas HaMikdash, he quotes Reb Chaim Kanievsky. Reb Chaim Kanievsky says that nowadays women have so many necklaces, so many earrings, so many rings. Did you ever walk into, again, I know there are all kinds of people on this conference, on the Zoom. Some of them have 40 pairs of shoes. Some might have only two or three pairs of shoes. They're probably differentiated by their gender. But women have many pairs of shoes. No one's going to ever wear all 40 at the same time. Well, just like many women might have 40 pairs of shoes or 5 or 10, whatever it is, well, many women might also have many necklaces and many bracelets and many rings and many earrings. So they're never going to wear all of their jewelry at the same time. The halacha, says Reb Chaim Kanievsky, of this zeichel mikdash was that you shouldn't wear all your jewelry at once. But nowadays, when we have such a plethora of jewelry and no one ever wears all their jewelry at once, there's no point in leaving something out, because of course you're not going to wear, you know, 7 necklaces and your 14 pairs of earrings, because you never do. And therefore, just because you don't wear one, that doesn't show anything. It just shows that it doesn't match your outfit, or it shows that you don't want to look, you know, cheesy and wear many necklaces of the same. Of course you don't, because that's just not what people do. So therefore, there's no point in leaving out one, because we always leave out one, because it's not normal to wear all of our jewelry all at once. Obviously, much more to talk about in terms of weddings, in terms of music, but we don't have time for that. I just want to wish all of us, Be'ezus Hashem, we should be zocha to remember the Beis HaMikdash, and as the Shulchan Aruch itself finishes, let me find the Shulchan Aruch. The Shulchan Aruch says, Kol Ela Hadvarim Kedei Lizkas Yushalayim Shneimar Meshkechech Yushalayim Emelah Les Yoshu Yushalayim Rosim Chasi. We should be indeed Zocha that through learning these halachos of Zeichel Mikdash, HaKadosh Baruch Hu should let us rejoice with its rebuilding. Be'ezus Hashem, very speedily, Meher of Yomein, we should be Zocha to rejoice and to celebrate Be'ezus Hashem in 2 weeks from now on Tisha B'Av with one another in Yushalayim HaBenuya. I just want to invite all of you next Monday night. The topic next Monday night will be the halachas of Kriya. The halachas of Kriya when you visit the Kotel, the halachas of Kriya when you visit Yerushalayim. how to tear, do you have to tear, what to tear, when to tear, how to tear. And I invite you to Allah again. I hope that those halachas will all be halacha v'lo l'maisa, so we could celebrate together. Thanks all for joining, and I wish you all a good evening. Bye-bye.